Space, the final frontier.
These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to seek out new life and new civilizations.
You forgot the rest.
I feel like I'm getting too quickly to boldly go where no one has gone before.
That's okay. Hello and welcome to the Bingeables Podcast. Podcast for geeky TV junkies, where we watch TV shows you just have to binge on. We're your hosts, Chinlin
and Isaac.
Welcome back, listeners, to the Bingeables Podcast. We have a few housekeeping and reminders we wanted to share before we dive into our special bonus episode. So, housekeeping. We are officially going to shift to a new release schedule. We're going to only release new episodes every other week or every 2 weeks from now on. Life has been getting a little busier than usual, and we still enjoy making this podcast. We're having fun with our guests and talking about shows we all like and dissecting them, interpreting them. So we thought it would be more feasible to change our schedule so that we're only releasing a new episode every other week. And we also have a reminder.
If you would like to support us, we have kind of two different ways that you can support us. One is to leave a review at your favorite podcast destination. And the second is to become a patron on Patreon. And you can find us at patreon.com/bingeablespod.
And, of course, you can always find us on Twitter at BingeablesPod as well. You can follow us, engage with us. We always like it when people want to talk with us.
Ooh, do we want to do a Whatcha Bingin'?
Oh, okay, sure. Whatcha been binging on, Isaac?
I've been binging on the Expanse book series, which I've finished, but there is apparently one more book, a ninth book, to cap out the whole series, and it's amazing. I don't know when that ninth book is going to come out. And since then, I just finished a three-book series, The Bobaverse. It's about a guy that signs up to be cryogenically preserved and then wakes up in the future as a sort of slave artificial intelligence.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So it's cool. It's good. And those books are actually short, and you can find all of those on audible.com. And that is a shameless plug. We're not even getting paid for it.
Yeah. If you want to try a free trial of Audible, you can go to audibletrial.com/geekgals. Geekgals.
Yeah, pretty sure it's geekgals. Now, we might get paid for that if you sign up for an Audible trial.
Yeah, you can do a 30-day free trial.
No longer a shameless plug. Okay, so what are you binging on?
Yesterday, I binged on season 3 of the Netflix and Sanrio anime series, Agretsuko. We've only covered one anime series in our entire podcast, and that was Beastars, which is also on Netflix. But Agretsuko is one I've been watching since the beginning. I love it. I think season 3 was awesome. It was a fresh spin to the series.
So you don't consider Castlevania an anime?
When I think of anime, I think of the original Japanese anime. So for Castlevania, I think I consider that an animated series.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, because like there's English animated series, right? So
sure,
they're not all Japanese.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's what I was binging on this weekend. Alrighty, we're going to dive into the episode introduction. This is part one of our two-part bonus. So we officially reached 2 years on the podcast as of August 19th, 2020. So we're going to follow the fashion that we did last year when we reached our one-year anniversary. Last year, we did a bonus episode on South Park. We took a poll on Twitter, and people wanted to hear us talk about South Park. And South Park happened to be one of Isaac's favorite shows of all time.
Yeah, us talk about South Park.
You talk about South Park, me reacting to it. So we're going to kind of repeat that process, but now we're going to do it on Star Trek The Next Generation. And because it's such a long show, we're going to divide it into two parts. So this is part one. And this is also our 83rd episode. Isaac, 83.
That's a weird number to celebrate, but okay.
Well, a few episodes ago, I mentioned this was our 80th.
Oh, okay. Okay. I mean, that sounds more reasonable to celebrate. 83 is a strange number. I think
we're not celebrating it. I'm just mentioning it.
Okay.
We're getting closer to 100.
We are getting closer to 100. I'm trying to think if 83 is prime or not.
Probably. We're getting closer to 100. With our new podcast schedule, that 100th episode will come next year instead of this year.
And let's be a little real here. So the reason we're doing two episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation is not because it's so long, but because you actually like it and...
It is long! That is one reason.
Okay, South Park has been on the air for 20 years. There's only 7 years of...
With South Park, I made you condense it.
Yeah. And we're condensing this too. So it's because you actually like this show and... I want to do lots of episodes on Star Trek The Next Generation.
We could do that in the future. I just don't have it planned for right now. Because I think this is a really special occasion to talk about Star Trek The Next Generation.
And it's good. I'm okay with this.
So, of course, like I mentioned, this is Isaac's favorite sci-fi drama. Star Trek The Next Generation was created by Gene Roddenberry. The show aired from 1987 to 1994, and it stars Sir Patrick Stewart, Jonathan Frakes, LeVar Burton.
Hold on. Frakes, not Frakes?
Is it Frakes?
I'm pretty sure it's Frakes.
I think Frakes sounds weird.
Okay. I agree. I think it sounds weird, but I definitely don't think it's Frakes. I don't think I've ever heard anyone say Frakes.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Jonathan Frakes. Frakes sounds weird to me.
Okay.
Denise Crosby, Michael Dorn, Gates McFadden, Marina Sirtis, Brett Spiner, and Will Wheaton.
Who's Denise Crosby?
I can't remember.
Oh, is that Tasha Yar? Is that her characters?
Well, let's pull it up on IMDb, shall we? Denise plays...
Yeah, yeah.
Tasha Yar.
Yeah, it's Tasha Yar. Yeah. I was like, what? Who is this? And obviously, before I spoil anything, for those of you that haven't watched the show, there are going to be spoilers. For example, the reason why I don't know Denise Crosby's name is because her character, Tasha Yar, is killed off at the end of season one. And she only shows up kind of occasionally throughout the rest of the show. And so it's not like she's someone I was familiar with from the credits crawl. Because I love the opening sequence. And so I feel like if I had seen her name a lot, I would have been like, oh, right, yeah, her. But one, I don't like season one because it's very rough. Very rough. And two, she was gone after season one. So, you know, there's that. All right. So...
Star Trek is huge in pop culture, so people are probably wondering, why did it take Chen-Lin this long to indulge in Star Trek The Next Generation?
Yeah, it's a good question. I have no idea. I tried to force it on her a long time ago. And, you know, part of that was, from my memory, the show starts to get good in season three. And so I tried to show her, like, early season three episodes, and those, while better than most of season one and season two episodes, are still not necessarily good. They can be kind of meh. Like, for example, the first episode that Chen-Lin remembers me showing her is The Survivors, which is episode 3 of season 3. And it's about, you know, this couple that appears to be like the sole survivors of an attack on a planet. And it's kind of weird. And the end thing is that it's really just this one super powerful being that was trying to relive the time that he had with his, I think, human wife. And he was just trying to chase off the Enterprise over and over again. I can see why Chin Lin wouldn't find that one very interesting. I also showed her, I think, Ensigns of Command, which is the second episode in season three, which is also not very interesting. And so to her, I understand why she wasn't really into it. So recently what I did was I kind of threw her in at the end of season three, which is where the Borg show back up. And I had to explain, you know, okay, well, here's what's going on with the Borg. And I gave her sort of a quick rundown, which is what I'm about to give you. Like, so in the beginning, there's this thing called the Crystalline Entity and Q. And they're two separate things. But Q is this all-powerful being that's always, like, messing with the Enterprise. And one time he shows up and... Picard's like, we don't need you. We can handle ourselves out here. And Q's like, oh, really? Let me show you what you think you can handle. And he like zaps them over to the Borg, and the Borg are like gonna assimilate everything into being part of their Borg collective, and the Enterprise can't outrun them, and it becomes a huge thing. And so at the end of season three, this all crops back up again, and the Borg are now trying to take over the Federation.
That was a great episode to show me, because Picard gets kidnapped and is forced to become a Borg. So, like, they know everything that he knows, and that's, like, a great conflict to have for a season finale.
Right.
And, you know, this was 1989 or something.
Yeah, something
so,
like that.
So, you know, people watching this on TV were forced to wait months until
a whole summer
until a new season started, so they had all summer to talk about that cliffhanger of a finale.
Yeah, and like for me, like I think I probably caught these episodes, like season three episodes, I think I caught them on in syndication or as reruns, not as they were airing live.
Well, yeah, you were younger.
Because that would have been like 1990 for the Borg episodes. And I do remember watching them as a kid, but I would have been like in kindergarten. So I don't think, so I must have watched them a little bit later. Now, I did end up watching the series finale live, but I was in third grade by that point. But yeah, a lot of them I caught kind of in syndication. So I showed you end of season three, beginning of season four first to get you hooked.
Yeah, those were the two-parters.
Yeah.
The Best of Both Worlds, part one, was the season three finale. And then The Best of Both Worlds, part two, was the season four premiere.
Now, understand, listeners, that this isn't like my preferred watching order, but like if you need to convince someone to watch the show, like...
You gotta get them hooked.
Yeah, so this, I feel like if you start there, you're doing good. Now, the problem is that we then try to continue into season four, but season four is where the show really gets good. But part of that is because it refers back to old episodes or old things that happened in the first three seasons. So I found myself a lot of times either having to try and, like, catch Chin Lin up on, like, here's what you need to know for this episode, or a few times I was able to be like, let's just go back. If it was just like a season three episode, I was like, well, we can go back and watch the season three episode, like those can't be terrible. And so that's how we ended up watching. I remembered that the episode Yesterday's Enterprise,
that's a really good one. I really enjoyed that one because that involves some serious time travel and some fucked up timelines that occur later.
Yeah. I was like, you were really confused at first. Like,
I was.
You did not, like, want to enjoy the episode. And because because when the episode starts, right, it starts off normal. You're in your normal Enterprise, and then they come up to this, like, temporal vortex thing, and a ship starts to come out, and then the entire Enterprise shifts, right? And it's suddenly, like, very battle-oriented looking, like...
Well, okay, the first thing I noticed that changed was Worf wasn't at his station anymore. It was some blonde lady. And the lighting was so dark.
Yeah.
Because right. The lighting on the bridge is always very bright.
Yeah.
So that was, those two changes were the first things that threw me off. So I didn't put it together that this was a different, this was an alternate timeline that right. we have been exposed to now as the viewer.
And I think your reaction is probably the same reaction that probably most viewers had. Like, they're not necessarily sure what's going on either.
But someone who's watched Star Trek since the beginning will know who Tasha Yar
yeah,
is.
You'll at least recognize Tasha Yar, and you might be able to put two and two together. But if you've come in late, you'd be like, I don't know who this woman is. And everyone seems to just... Like, everyone's reaction is, this is all normal, right?
Yeah, and Guinan, played by Whoopi Goldberg, is like, wait, this is not right. Something's very, very wrong.
Right, yeah.
And I didn't put together that it was an alternate timeline because Guinan was still present.
Mm-hmm. I recognized that that was an important one because of... a plot line that happens later on in season four, in fact, at the end of season four with the Romulans and Klingons, that I was like, okay, we're going to have to watch yesterday's Enterprise. Plus, you like time travel, and this is a time travel episode, and it's not one that's, like, super ridiculous. I also showed her just kind of trying to get a feel for the things that happened in season three. Like, I showed her The Offspring, where Data creates his daughter, Lol. But
that was last year when you showed me, when you were still trying
when I was trying to get you.
The first time you were trying to get me into this show. I did enjoy it. It wasn't, like, super noteworthy.
Well, that's the thing. It was not funny. Super noteworthy. Yeah, because I don't know that they necessarily bring it up ever again.
Data makes his own daughter.
Well, because there's an episode where Data runs into, he gets recalled by Dr. Noonien Soong, and I can't remember what episode that is. I'm going to look it up real quick.
Is that the brothers episode?
Oh, that's the second time he runs into Lore. Yes. So,
it was brothers, right?
Yeah, you're right. It's in that episode... Data asks Dr. Noonien Soong, his creator, you know, why did you create me? And Dr. Noonien Soong eventually gives him the answer, you know, to give myself a sense of immortality, like creating children. And it's strange that Data didn't recognize that because he had created Lol earlier, right? And they don't seem to talk about, like...
Wait. His daughter's name was Lol?
Yeah.
L-A-W-L?
Or something like that. Or L-A-L. But that's the thing. Like, so Dr. Noonien Soong was saddened that Data hadn't tried to become a cybergeneticist or anything. But he was disappointed that Data had joined Starfleet. But Data didn't even mention, like, oh, yeah, I tried to do that a little bit. But, you know, the positronic matrix that I created, you know, had a cascade failure and I couldn't figure it out. I liked that episode, but it feels like the writers just kind of went, eh, that one didn't happen.
So you liked Offspring?
Yeah, well, I liked the idea of Offspring, like Data wanting... It's weird to have Data want to do anything, because
wanting to have
feeling,
a human legacy.
Yeah.
Something like that. So the episode Brothers in season four was my first exposure to Data's brother Lore.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this was one of the first of many opportunities I recognized that Brent Spiner was able to flex his acting chops, because seeing him as Lore and then seeing him as Data, they're like opposite sides of the moon.
I was like, they're very different. And you're like, you, when you start to think about the show in a meta sense like that, you're like, oh, wow, that's the same guy. And he is like, I definitely believe that those are two different people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's not just the different characters and dialogue. Like, Lore had a different gait.
Right.
Like Data's walk is very, obviously very robotic because he's an android. But whenever Brent Spiner can play other versions of himself, or Data, I guess, like, you can tell he's having a lot of fun with it.
Yeah.
Also, their creator, Dr. Soon, I didn't even know he was human. He looked so creepy to me. He didn't look human.
Yeah, they put a lot of makeup on him. I think that was also Brent Spiner.
Who played the dad?
Mm-hmm.
So they had one actor play three characters in a single episode?
Yeah, I think so. I'm going to look it up to be sure, but I'm pretty sure that Dr. Nguyen Sung on that one. I mean, I know for sure later that he plays Sung, so I think he also did here. So I think they had him like hunch over and become like a smaller, older guy and affect an old man voice.
Well, that was a lot of makeup. But yeah, you don't know for sure if that was him?
I don't. I feel like it was, but I'm not 100% sure on that. We'll find out later.
Okay. So now I've caught the Star Trek bug. And I start going through the episode guide, and I see this thumbnail of Dr. Beverly Crusher. So she's like my favorite female character. And I read the episode, and I was like, the episode summary. And I was like, oh, I want to watch this one. This one's with Beverly. So it's episode 5 called Remember Me. And this is the one where she... Wesley accidentally traps her in a warp bubble reality. And you were complaining that Netflix has terrible episode summaries because they spoil some of it for you.
Yeah.
Because you told me as I was watching, you're not supposed to know that it's an alternate reality. That's part of the fun, being able to figure it out. Yeah,
I was like, that's literally the plot of the episode, is to figure out what's going on with Beverly, because people just start disappearing. And at first you're like, okay, well, maybe she's just a little crazy, or
her universe is collapsing.
Yeah, it starts getting smaller and smaller, and people, like, huge amounts of people start to disappear. And so, and, you know, at a certain point, you're like, no, she's got a point. Like, why does the complement of the Enterprise, why is everyone okay with it only having 200 people on it? We've been told before that there's supposed to be 1,000. What's going on? Yeah, and so Netflix, you know, telling you,
that she's stuck in an alternate reality ruins that mystery.
Yeah.
When you're watching it on Netflix.
I was like, Netflix really needs to get to like one sentence summaries of the first 5 minutes of the show, and that's it. Like, give me a setup of like what might happen, or what happens in the first 5 minutes. Don't like give away the entire episode. It's ridiculous.
I wasn't upset, because I still had fun trying to figure out what is it she was experiencing, even though I knew from the summary that she was in an alternate reality. And it kind of shows how smart Beverly is when she's faced with this
a
whole different world.
I mean, she certainly questions, she's like, am I insane? But she's like, no, because I, you know, logically, like, none of this makes sense. So I'm not insane, but I don't understand how everyone else doesn't see the changes. So, yeah, I mean, I definitely like the episode. So I'm upset with Netflix and their summaries.
Yeah, I liked that one. We're going to skip to episode 7, Reunion. This is the one where I get my first exposure to all of this Klingon drama.
Oh, yeah.
Worf's mate.
So this was tough because I had to kind of summarize like all the stuff that, because this is
all the Klingon stuff.
Yeah. Because back in season two, you know, Worf accepts this commendation to
protect
the Klingon Empire because the Duras family was actually the ones that should have that actually like did the crime, but because they're so powerful, the council was like, well, let's just say it was Worf's family because he's the only one left, and since he's the only one left and he's in Starfleet, no one's gonna care if it was him. So
but they do care, right? There's so much prejudice in the Klingon culture.
Well, so the idea sort of was that Worf would just have to deal with it. And since he was in Starfleet, he's not in the Klingon Empire and he's not going to experience it that much unless, you know, there happen to be dealings with the Klingon Empire.
Yeah, but like it would also affect his son, which he now knows he has a son.
Right. So he didn't know that he had a son.
His mate shows up in this reunion episode and she's like, "Oh, hey, I have a son. He's yours."
Yeah. Yeah. Which it's only been 2 years, but that kid's like 5 years old. So time's going really weird with Worf's son. And I that's always been something that kind of stuck with me, like how old Alexander was compared to how much time had passed since Alexander could have possibly been born.
Wait, so he didn't exist in season two at all? Oh.
They had sex in season two, and that was it.
So he should have been one.
Ish, yeah.
One-ish.
Yeah, one and a half. Maybe, yeah.
Oh, so he should have been a baby.
He should have been like a little kid, not a 4-year-old or a 5-year-old.
And they never explain that in the show? Like, do Klingons just age faster?
Not that I'm aware of, no. They don't say anything like that.
Okay. All right. I think they make the same mistake in Seth MacFarlane's Orville.
Oh, yeah, with...
with Bordis.
Bordis, who is... sort of a Klingon stand-in.
Yeah, so I love the Orville. The Orville is obviously inspired by Star Trek The Next Generation, but the Orville is kind of like my intro, my gateway drug into all of this.
So, fun fact for you, I'm sure our listeners probably know this, but there have been several episodes of Family Guy that Star Trek The Next Generation cast members have guest starred on, have made cameos on. I think all of the major, like, one, Patrick Stewart, a bit on Family Guy, but it features prominently in American Dad. But then Jonathan Frakes and Michael Dorn and LeVar Burton, I think, have all been on Family Guy.
Oh, okay.
I think Gates McFadden might be the only one that hasn't been on. I'm not 100% certain on that. Oh, but one thing I am 100% certain on now is that Data did play Dr. Noonien Soong, Lore, and Data in that episode.
Yeah, while I was talking, he was searching on IMDb.
Yeah.
So you were correct. Yep. He played three characters in one episode?
Yep.
That must have been so much shooting.
Yeah.
Because they have to merge the images.
Yeah. So, I mean, there was a lot of stand-ins. I think if you notice, there's not a lot of face-to-face on any of them. It's always the back of someone's head and someone's face, for the most part.
Or, like, you zoom in on the person's face when they're talking. And right. Then you cut to the other person.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of, like, mirror, mirror, I'm going to, like, see both of myself. They didn't do that very much. But yeah, he played all three.
And then next, episode 8, I watched this because I have a crush on William Riker.
Yeah.
He's very sexy.
So what's interesting about this one to me is that...
Episode 8, Future Imperfect.
The thing that really sets it off is something that you... couldn't possibly know because you haven't seen season one.
At the time I watched this.
I still don't think you've seen the episode that's relevant. It's the episode is titled like 11001001 or something. And the reason is because the Enterprise has gone to some starbase to get some upgrades from this race that is like speaks in binary and works in like binary pairs, and their whole shtick is they're trying to distract Commander Riker with this extremely lifelike woman in the holodeck while they like take over. And her name was Minuet, and then that comes up in this episode, Future Imperfect. And you want to tell us like what you were thinking during this episode?
The only reason why I was interested was because it was obviously, you know, I'm reading the episode summary on Netflix, and the thumbnail is Riker playing a trombone. And I was like, oh, I want to see a Riker episode. So I was very happy this was focused on him. And then so he gets captured on when they go in, when he and his away team go to the planet. There's all this like smoke, and then he is unconscious, and then he wakes up and he's old because it's been supposedly it's been 16 years into the future. So he's lost 16 years of his life. But I still thought he looked sexy older.
And it's not that he's been like unconscious for 16 years. No, it's that he picked up some virus on the planet 16 years ago, and somehow this virus is able to erase your memories all the way back to the time that you were infected, but not any time before that. And so he's been told that he's lost the memories of his last 16 years. And I feel like it. I like the episode because it's a really good, like, they drop all the hints that you need kind of early on. And like, even if you don't get there, Riker eventually does. And he's like, no, there's no way that this is real because Geordi, you're not that incompetent. You can't possibly be running a level one diagnostic for this long. Data, you are like a human computer. If I ask you like how to calculate something, you immediately give me an answer. You don't go, well, and stall. So this is clear, like something's wrong here. And then what I liked about this was the first reveal is like, oh, it's the Romulans. They captured you and they're trying to get the location of Outpost 23, except that the Romulans go, you know, we were trying to get this information from you. And Riker's like, well, but you got everything else out of my head. How come you couldn't just pull that? And they're like, oh, well, there were gaps. And he's like, nah, man, you guys got like the smell down and everything else. Like, what gaps? How could you not pull that information out? Like, I don't have like implants or anything protecting that information, which would have been a good reason. But then it turns out it's just this kid that wanted somebody to play with.
Yeah, he's all by himself, and it's really sad. And he's not even a human boy. He turns out to be an alien boy, and I thought his alien self looked a little creepy.
You did say that. You're like, oh, that's creepy.
It was actually kind of endearing by the end.
Yeah.
It's just some boy who's lonely, and he's fucking around because he's lonely.
Yeah. Most of the reason I like this show is because there's a lot of mysteries to solve. Like, oh, I don't know, what's going on? What is this?
This is a very good show for someone who's into mystery.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we skip a few episodes and we go to episode 13 titled Devil's Due. I really liked this one because this lady thinks she's some god of this planet.
Well,
who's been around for 1,000 years.
I think she knows she's not.
Well, she's presenting herself like she's the god of this planet.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I brought you guys 1,000 years of peace and prosperity, and now you guys have to give your souls to me.
Yeah, it's essentially, well, it wasn't their souls. Like, they suddenly, like, everything became her property, and they were all her slaves.
Yeah. And I liked the storyline. I think the actress who played the con artist was very good at her performance. Seeing Picard trying to figure out how she was getting away with it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. I especially liked, like, in the end of the episode where he, like, without the part of demonstrating that he could also use her powers, the other part where he was like, okay, so after you guys signed the contract, did all the wars just immediately stop? No, that happened over time. Oh, okay. And then the pollution, did that just immediately go away? Oh no, we wrote some environmental laws and you know it went away over time. Oh, I see. And so the economic prosperity, did that just happen immediately? No, that also happened over time. I'm like, yeah, so
everything good that happened to the people on the planet were because of themselves, not because of some god.
Right. And it was amazing that they hadn't tried to put that together themselves.
Yeah, like they worshipped this god and they weren't recognizing that they did all the work.
Yeah, it's like, you guys literally did all the work. I can't believe no one's trying to take credit for it. Because and that's the one thing that I feel like is a little unrealistic about that episode, is I think a lot of, like, there would have been someone in that society being like, oh, we did this. I'll fight you in court. Like, no, you didn't do this at all.
I want to disagree with you right here. I thought it did feel a little realistic. The people's mentality on that planet is very reminiscent of, you know, some people in our human world here.
Right.
Very religious people who feel like the good things in their life come from their god.
Right. And I don't disagree that those people exist. And I don't take issue with them existing on that planet. I'm taking issue with the idea that the people that aren't like that didn't also exist.
They didn't speak up.
Yeah. Oh, clues. I liked that one.
Can you remind me, who was the antagonist in episode 14 titled Clues?
Some race. I forget who they are. But do you not remember the plot?
I remember the plot. I don't remember the antagonist.
Oh, I don't remember the name of the race, but just some xenophobic race that
did not want the Enterprise to know they existed.
They didn't want anyone to know they existed.
Yeah.
And so their kind of solution was, so since you know we exist, we're going to kill you. And then, I mean, you find all this out at the end of the episode. And so what I thought was amazing was no one was calling Data on his evasions. Like, they would be like, Data, can you tell us what is going on? He would say, I cannot. And no one would follow up with, why can you not? Like, why not?
No one had the distinction of saying, you cannot. Do you mean you will not?
Right.
You know, like, because, there's a difference.
Yeah. And so I feel like it was great writing, because they were like, no, look, in casual conversation, you, like, if you're not thinking like, oh, this android is going to be literal with me, you'd be like, oh, okay, I guess you don't understand what's going on either. Instead of like, oh, you were ordered not to tell me. So I really like this one, because it was...
they do this process twice.
Yeah, they end up having to do it twice because there were too many clues about... So the idea, if you haven't watched it, is that they run into this civilization. The civilization is like, we don't want you to know that we exist, so we're going to kill you. And then Picard's like, whoa, hold on, can you erase our memories? And they're like, yeah. And they're like, okay, well, how about you do that? And we'll just be on our way.
Data's not affected because he's not human. But, like, Picard...
orders him not to reveal any information about the civilization. And so that should be enough, right?
But there's clues left, right, that tell us...
something weird happened.
Mm-hmm.
And that they need to investigate. And so it all goes to shit and they end up right back at the planet. Because Data is terrible at lying and covering his tracks.
So they have to repeat the process, except they actually take the steps necessary to cover up the clues from the first try.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I really liked this episode because it felt very reminiscent of another one of my favorite sci-fi shows, Dark Matter. Obviously, listeners, if you've been listening to us for a while, you know Dark Matter is my shit. This episode reminded me of season one of Dark Matter, where the crew on the ship, you know, their memories were erased, so they were trying to figure out what happened during the time that they couldn't remember.
Right. And, you know, they were told it was 30 seconds, but then there was all this evidence that it was, you know, much longer than 30 seconds. It was about a day. And so that was too curious of a thing to let go. So second time around, they fixed that. You want to move on to the next episode that you want to talk about?
Episode 17, titled Night Terrors. This is a super freaky mystery because, Deanna is affected by this as well as everyone else.
I was like, everyone's affected, but...
But she's the one who has to do the communication.
Because she's half Bezozoid, yeah.
Uh-huh. With the,
this other ship, apparently. I mean, so they get stuck, so the Enterprise is out to rescue a ship. And they find everyone dead except this one Betazoid passenger. But his mind is completely fucked, and they can't really get anything out of him.
Yeah, yeah, he can't really communicate what has happened to the crew on the ship that the Enterprise found. So, and then freaky things start to happen with everyone on the Enterprise. And they put two and two together. Okay, so the stuff happening on the Enterprise is the stuff that happened to the past crew. But the past crew pretty much went insane and killed themselves.
Yeah, killed everyone. So, like, it starts to happen on the Enterprise, and they have to figure out, okay, well, what is causing this?
And it turned out that nobody is able to enter REM sleep, which is,
apparently something humans need to do. What's weird is that I feel like there are multiple species on the Enterprise, and like only the Betazoid, half Betazoid, is able to, you know, not have this issue. I feel like there should have been some other species that were also fine, but, you know, whatever. Doesn't matter. You don't have to be super consistent in the Next Generation.
Okay, so this is my understanding. The Betazoids aren't totally affected by this issue in the episode because their minds are more advanced than humans.
That's not it.
No? Well, because Betazoids they have telepathy, right?
Right. But what it is that when Betazoids dream, the brain waves that they use are some different pattern. They're not alpha brain waves or something else. And so their ability to enter REM sleep still exists, right? But all they're getting is sort of the communication from that other ship that's trying to tell them, like, trying to send information to get out of the snare that they're in. Everyone else is having their brainwaves interrupted for REM sleep. So it could just be that everyone else is using alpha waves and Betazoids are only using delta waves in REM sleep, but that was the explanation that we got.
I liked how they got to the conclusion with the hydrogen atom.
Yeah, one moon circle.
Two moons, one circle.
Two eyes in the dark, one moon circling or something.
Yeah, yeah. That itself is a pretty freaky metaphor.
Yeah, I feel like that's a real stretch
to get to the hydrogen.
Yeah, to get to a hydrogen atom,
because Data had to pull up the
had to pull up all the chemical compounds
and they just had to look through each one, and then Deanna was like, wait, what's that image?
Yeah.
Oh, it's the hydrogen atom. Oh, we need to release hydrogen or something so that there's this big explosion.
That's a huge leap. But, I mean, Gosh, so the thing is, like, when you're writing science fiction, right, especially, you know, now 30 years ago, there's only so much that you can do that an average audience will understand and go, oh, okay, cool, that's neat, I could have gotten that. So, you know, you have to do something. But yeah, I feel like it heavily relied on just a huge coincidence to end up at the resolution there. Oh, I do want to say something about the Nth Degree. The whole reason I had you watch the episode that introduced Barkley was that I really liked the Nth Degree, where Barkley gets super smart and takes the Enterprise to the center of the galaxy, and they meet another race. I really liked it.
You like the episode The Nth Degree, and or you like Barkley? Also, is it Barkley or Barkley?
I think Barkley. I don't know why, like,
when I see his name spelled out, I think I want to pronounce it the way.
Yeah, Barkley.
Barkley.
Right. But I think it's Barkley. Similar to, like, did you notice that in the episode we just talked about, the name of the ship printed on the ship was the Britain, right? Which makes sense, like the Britannic. But every time it was spelled out in the captions, they said the Bratain. Like, they had an A in there instead of an I.
I noticed that, but I think the characters pronounced it Bratain.
Yeah, they did. And so it every time I read it in the captions, I'm like, why do you keep captioning it as Bratain? That's not what they're saying. Anyway. So I think something similar is happening here, is they're captioning it Barkley, but, you know, everyone's saying Barkley, which makes more sense when his nickname is Broccoli, right?
But yeah, he gets his 10 minutes in the limelight when he gets this unusual bout of confidence.
And knowledge. He just gets a ridiculous amount of knowledge. What I find sad is that he was able to create this method of transportation across huge swaths of the galaxy using technology that, or using materials that already existed on the Enterprise, which means that the materials that they had, they could, if they had studied it, they could have started using that technology to travel instead of warp drive. But they don't, which makes me sad.
Wait, what technology are you referring to?
Don't you remember, like, he opened up some sort of weird sort of
he merged himself with the computer.
With the ship, right? Uh-huh. And then he used the ship to open up a sort of wormhole to the star system of that alien race.
Uh-huh.
Right? That means that the Enterprise has the technology on it to open up those wormholes anytime. It already existed.
Maybe it's a writer mishap. Maybe it's something...
Yeah, so it could be something where they were like, no, that's too powerful. We're going to forget that ever happened, and we're going to move on, because that would break it. Not only would that break the Next Generation, but that would seriously break the entire Star Trek Voyager series, because their whole arc is trying to get back to the Alpha Quadrant from the Delta Quadrant.
I liked the part where he becomes the computer.
Yeah.
He merges with the entire ship's computer.
And he's like, I'm just going to do my own thing.
Because it's so unlike him.
Yeah.
And then at the end, when he goes back to normal, like, he's a little embarrassed.
Yeah. Of course, like, I'm sorry, I disobeyed orders, Captain. Whoops.
Next, we're going to talk about episode 23, The Host, another Beverly-centric episode. This is the one where she falls for that handsome guy.
And it's our first introduction to the Trill species, which I don't think that they really ever touch on again, except in Deep Space Nine. There's a Trill host.
So the Trill... In this universe, the Trill are a species that are hosts?
No, they use humanoid hosts. They are symbiotes, is what the proper term is called. They form a symbiotic relationship with their host, And they take on all the memories of their hosts and some of their host personality. But then the main portion of their personality comes from the symbiote, which is a very long-lived creature, could be thousands of years.
And that's the thing that was in the stomach.
Yes, that's the actual Trill.
Oh, okay, okay. The person isn't the Trill.
Correct.
The thing that's in the stomach
is the Trill.
Is the Trill.
Correct.
Oh, okay. Okay, I was getting it confused. So the host itself is the Trill.
No, the symbiote is the Trill.
The symbiote is the Trill. The host is the person that we see.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so on the Trill homeworld, they have these symbiotes and these, you know, humanoid people that become hosts. But not everyone gets to be a host. You have to, you know, go through. And they haven't established this in this episode. But eventually they're like, yeah, you have to go through all this training. And there's all these psychological tests and stuff to make sure that you can handle being a host.
Yeah, because the guy who was the host that Beverly was, you know, having relations with, he dies.
Yeah.
And then Riker is like, oh, I volunteered to be the host until the next host arrives to replace the first guy.
Mm-hmm.
So then William Riker isn't able to actually be the host because the Trill in him is like draining his energy too much.
Well, it's actually more like his body is rejecting it like a bad organ. It's like, this is not part of me. Kill it. Kill it. But that immune response is killing his body too.
Okay.
So now one thing that they overlooked in this episode, and it's because they hadn't really established the lore around the Trill yet, was that since Riker became a host to that Trill now has all of his knowledge and memories. So any like Starfleet secrets that Commander Riker has, that Trill now has them too. So that's a huge security breach. Like, I think that if I had found out that the ambassador was a Trill and that the symbiote was the thing that held all the memories and we needed another host, I'd have been like, okay, so how does this process work? How do the memories work? Oh, they'll get all of that person's memory? Okay, cool. Random ensign nobody, why don't you get over here and host this Trill for me for a few days? I'm not letting you have my first officer for this. But of course, they're not going to do that because, you know, actors.
Oh, man. Yeah. I thought it was weird that he volunteered.
Yeah. Yeah. So there have been a couple of times when, like, they would do something and I'm like, what? Why? For example, in the episode where they go into this nebula and there's like all these pockets of dark matter fucking things up and they need to have someone in a shuttle out in front of the ship.
Did you show me that one?
Yeah, pretty sure.
I don't remember.
Oh, well, anyway, Picard's like, Riker's about to pilot the shuttle and Picard's like, no, I'm going to do it. And Riker's like, no, you definitely shouldn't do it. It's definitely something in my purview. And Captain's like, no, I'm going to do it. I want to do it.
Oh, right.
And I'm like, what? You're just gonna, no, you're the captain. Get your ass back on the ship. But yeah, it's so weird.
Yeah. It was weird for Riker to volunteer to be the host. And, well, obviously, Jonathan Frakes can, you know, stretch his acting chops in this episode because, the symbiote. He's acting as the symbiote.
Right. He's got to adopt the mannerisms. But so.
Uh-huh. And then he and Beverly.
Yeah. That's crazy. That's the crazy part is that.
They boink, but then they never talk about it ever again.
Ever again. Because that would be like, man, that is so awkward because now they have had sex and it's not like Commander Riker doesn't remember whatever he was doing as the host. He remembers all of it. So, like, he's going to remember having sex with Beverly now. Ugh.
And it's so strange that they can just bypass all of that. They're just when like, this whole thing is over.
Yeah. They're just like, whatever. We had sex. Uh-huh. And I'm like, no, there's no way.
And then Beverly's like, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, that's the crazy part. I'm like, okay, look, I get that Commander Riker is attractive, but like...
Like, does she ever show any...
any interest in Commander Riker after that? No.
No, before this.
No.
Okay, so it makes them having sex even weirder to watch.
Yeah, because it's like, I get that he's attractive, but like, I know also as a normal human being, like if the brain of someone I loved got popped into someone else's body and I knew that person and I was not necessarily attracted to them, I'd been like, yeah, this is too weird for me. I'm definitely going to need some time. And then, since it was only temporary, I definitely would have been like, no, we'll wait till you get into a more permanent body before we, you know, do any more sexual things. But she's like, nah, fuck it. Get me some Commander Riker dick.
And then the host that actually shows up is a female.
Yeah.
And Beverly is not attracted to women, so...
And so the whole thing ends up, yeah. I mean, I like the episode, but there's some weird stuff that happens that you're like,
what? I like the twist at the end where the final host is a female.
Yeah.
Because they could have easily just brought in another guy, but this guy could have actually been ugly.
Yeah. But instead, they wanted, so.
They needed something to like.
They needed to really drive it home.
They needed to draw a line.
Yeah.
Like, Beverly does not identify as bi or lesbian or whatever, so she's not going to go that route with the man, the symbiote that she loves.
Right. You know, it kind of goes to like this human thing of like, look, we are attracted to bodies that we're attracted to, and so if someone suddenly inhabits a body that, you know, we're not attracted to, it's common for us to go, yeah, no, I can't do that. Of course, you know, ideally, we should be able to, but that's just not how our brains are wired for the most part.
And not just that, but they did a switch of a host twice in, like, what, 2-3 days?
Yeah, something like that.
Like, the symbiote was only in Riker's body for, like, 2 days.
Yeah, if that. It may have been
maybe 3 days,
a day and a half. Yeah, maybe 3 days, but it wasn't a very long time.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a lot to ask for Beverly to adjust mentally. Hey, this is still the symbiote that I love, but the body is different.
Yeah.
Like having to do that so many times just in one episode,
especially,
that's a lot to ask.
Because they didn't. So this is apparently when this Trill secret gets out, because no one knew it before that the people were essentially like symbiotes and hosts. And so.
Because the first guy didn't want to get on the transporter.
Yeah. If everyone had already known, oh, like this is how the Trill society works. There are these hosts and symbiotes, and it's possible that the host dies and the symbiote goes into another host, so you'll need to be aware of that. I think Beverly probably would have been a little more cautious about entering into a relationship, but because that wasn't really known until this point, that's where all this drama comes about. Okay, you want to talk about the next one?
Episode 24, The Mind's Eye. This is another one where you got mad at me for reading the summary.
Yes, because it immediately tells you that, like, what's going on is Geordi's been brainwashed. And I'm like, what? No. Like, that's supposed to be, like...
The mystery that you figure out.
Yeah, part of the mystery is that you need to, like, understand... Yeah, anyway...
But yeah, Geordi gets brainwashed by the Romulans.
And, oh, so what's interesting, so we've talked about that Tasha Yar episode where she went back in time.
Right? Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Okay, and I'm going to skip ahead to 26 where the Klingon...
Redemption.
Yeah, where we find out, where we see at the end of episode 26, we see Tasha Yar as a Romulan. At the season finale, and you're like, what the fuck? Why is there a Tasha Yar? What you missed was that in this episode, episode 24, there was a female Romulan in the shadows, giving some orders, right?
Oh.
Now, what they did was they had someone else entirely, but they used Tasha Yar's voice to be the person that was giving those orders. I noticed it because I was like, those lips aren't syncing up. And that's Tasha Yar's voice. Oh, that's going to be the reveal. I remember that now. But yeah, so she's actually giving some of the... So they're setting up, even in episode 24, they're setting up episode 26 even a little more with the Romulans interfering and trying to cause a rift between the Klingons and the Federation.
Those goddamn Romulans.
Yeah. Yeah, the Romulans. They're a good antagonist. And God.
Oh, but this is the thing I really liked about you having shown me the episode yesterday's Enterprise.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't have realized they're calling back to Tasha Yar going back to Enterprise C in the past, 20 years in the past. And then we find out in, what, the season 5 premiere? Because this is a two-parter.
Yeah.
The season 4 finale and the season 5 premiere are a two-parter. And we find out that the woman we see with Tasha Yar's face, obviously it's the same actress, but she's playing Tasha Yar's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And this daughter only existed because we went back to an alternate timeline.
Right,
because... Where Tasha Yar is on the Enterprise C.
Yeah. Where Tasha Yar gets sent to the Enterprise C, so she ends up back 23 years in the past.
And
the Enterprise C doesn't
get... destroyed.
Yeah, I don't know if it gets destroyed or not. Maybe it does, but it certainly loses the battle, and then there are survivors from that battle that get taken in as prisoners by the Romulans. One of those prisoners happens to be Tasha Yar, and Tasha Yar ends up having a daughter, and it's this daughter... that is now trying to drive a wedge between the Federation and the Klingon Empire.
And it's so tragic because Tasha Yar wanted to go back to Enterprise C because she wanted to die a hero.
Right. She thought she was going to die and then she didn't. And yeah.
And so. She ends up being a prisoner and it's implied she becomes a sex slave.
Yeah.
By a Romulan guy.
Well... Yeah, it's implied. Her daughter doesn't seem to think that. Her daughter seems to think that, you know, she was given, you know, every comfort and was ungrateful to her Romulan father and tried to escape. Which, you know, points to either some really powerful indoctrination by the Romulans, which is, I think, what we're supposed to believe here. Or that, you know, Tasha Yar was ungrateful, which is probably... also true. Like, she doesn't care that she's been given every convenience. Like, she's like, I'm still, like...
Well, I mean,
a luxury prison is still a prison.
They were captured.
Yeah.
And she wasn't planning on living past the battle. So she ends up dying a really sad death trying to escape with her daughter, who she cared for.
Right.
Even though the daughter is a reminder that she was captured by Romulans.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's really sad, and then the daughter ends up favoring her Romulan heritage.
Right.
Over her human heritage.
Yep.
But she wouldn't even have existed if it weren't for Picard!
Yeah. The whole situation wouldn't have existed if it weren't for Picard.
Well, I mean, if the Romulans have been trying to drive a wedge between the Klingons and the Federation for a while, like, I can still see this type of situation still happening, but well, maybe it wouldn't have been her daughter.
Well, so that's maybe, but so far, like, in each situation where the Romulans are... okay. Yeah, that's not true. We don't necessarily know that the Romulan help that Duras was getting before... was necessarily from Tasha Yar's daughter. All right, that's fair.
Ha! I got you! but yeah, I like the episodes that you've just been showing me. Like, I like the show more and more.
And it only gets better from here. So, guys, we stopped going forward in the future at episode 1 of season 5.
Yeah. So now we're going to wrap up because there's not that much more we're going to talk about. So this is the part where I decided, okay, Isaac has shown me really good episodes from seasons 3, 4, and I only saw one episode of 5. So I decided to go back to season 1 and see, okay, season 1 is supposedly pretty rough. Okay, well, how rough is it exactly? I want to be able to see for myself so I can make proper comparisons. So I watched the pilot three more episodes in season 1, but I'm only going to talk about 2. I'm going to talk about the pilot, Encounter at Farpoint, and I'm going to talk about episode 16, When the Bow Breaks. So the pilot was very, very rough, and that's putting it lightly.
Yeah. Oh, man.
The first 40 minutes was super weird and unbearable, and I actually like that we meet Q in the pilot, because he's a reoccurring villain.
Mm-hmm.
He's this weird magical god guy.
Yeah.
Who can just pop in and change his appearance, and I like that we meet him in the pilot to establish show canon of this villain. What I did not like was the execution.
Yeah.
Like, Q wants to fuck up this... He wants to fuck with Picard and, like, take him in this weird situation where humans are on trial and the crew on the Enterprise represent all of the bad things that humanity ever did.
Which is, you know...
But he's dressed in weird garb. Yeah. And then, like, the people who are witnesses... Not witnesses. The people who are just watching the trial. They're dressed like they're from, what, the 15th century? But then Q is like, oh, this is a 22nd century kind of trial. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah, it's... It's very weird. So, okay, I'll explain some of it. So, they were trying to keep with the canon of the original series. And in the original series, they had described the 1990s as this really, like, fucked up time where there was all this war and soldiers were just given lots of drugs to be able to do the war and stuff. Because, you know, that show was made in the 60s, so... You know, who knows what's going to happen in 30 years, right? So they were keeping with that. But then it's very strange that the crew of the Enterprise has to represent humanity, because a lot of the crew of the Enterprise are not humans. So, like, why are they representing humanity? So... I found that part weird, but that's because they hadn't really, you know, kind of fleshed out all their lore and stuff. But, yeah, I think it's really important to, you know, talk about, you know, there are all powerful beings out there, and, you know, space exploration is not necessarily just going to be safe everywhere. And it doesn't have to be that you're at war with one faction or race or whatever. It can just be like, oh, there's this asshole and he'll do whatever he wants.
So the first 40 minutes was a little unbearable. And then, okay, so the pilot is like 90 minutes. So the second half of the pilot was more along the lines of what I would expect from a Star Trek The Next Generation episode. We're seeing more of the crew, we're learning more about them. They pick up Riker, so this is the first time we meet Riker. He doesn't have a beard.
He doesn't have a beard. He's also, like, kind of thin. he actually looks fit.
That's mean.
Well, by season 3, like, he's hiding it well, but he's kind of chubby.
I suppose. No offense to Jonathan Frakes.
Oh, I think he knows. I think he knows. He was like, oh no, yeah, I was sucking it in the whole time.
Okay, so Riker doesn't have a beard. He's a little thinner. Their uniforms are slightly different. And Data is not as pale. His makeup isn't as pale. So he looks like he just has a really bad tan. And his mannerisms in the pilot weren't the normal mannerisms that I saw in seasons 3 and on.
Yeah, he hadn't quite worked out how to be an android. He was essentially a sort of weirdly colored human that sometimes had some quirky movements.
And the bridge was weird too, because the two officers right in front of the window,
the view screen,
the two stations in right in front of the view screen, their chairs are leaned back. Yeah. And I thought that was weird because it's not supposed to be leaned back. You're handling the bridge functions, right? You're navigating stuff. Your seat should be sitting up so you're more alert. So seeing Data and Geordi and whoever else.
I think O'Brien was also.
O'Brien, seeing them laying back trying to do that in those two front stations, that was like a huge turnoff for me.
I took issue with the weird-ass wood paneling on the sides of the ramps.
I didn't even notice it until you pointed it out.
And the back bridge area was much darker than normal. What I consider normal. They brighten it up later on in the show. But yeah, that back area was also just really dark. So the whole thing, I don't know. It had this, to me, sort of like 1970s vibe to it. And I was like, this does not look futuristic. This looks fucking old.
What else?
I mean, we can move on.
No. I really want to talk about my thoughts when I was watching this.
Okay.
Because they're fresh. I literally watched this yesterday, guys. Oh, Beverly's hair was darker. And Will Wheaton as Wesley in this episode was really cute. He was a cute kid. He even commented that in his appearance in The Big Bang Theory.
So what my thoughts were, I didn't like Captain Picard as much in the pilot.
Because
he seemed very like stiff and like they really leaned hard on his hatred of children. So yeah, I don't know. Like, so they do later kind of push his uncomfortableness with children, but not like in this pilot. Like, he absolutely seems to loathe children and doesn't want them like anywhere on his ship or around him or anything. Later on, he has a much more sort of practical view of children. But
oh, children! That's a great segue into episode 16, When the Bell Breaks. But first, one more comment. Worf.
Oh, yeah.
In season 1.
Worf looks ridiculous.
His makeup is terrible. His hair is terrible.
And his sash is just like a piece of carpet. Like, it.
Also, Michael Dorn's voice wasn't as deep.
He didn't deepen his voice for season, probably that whole season.
Yeah.
Later on, he decides that the character needs a deeper voice. But yeah, initially, it's not nearly as deep.
Yeah. So episode 16, When the Bow Breaks, I liked this one. I was just reading the summaries and I picked a few and I actually enjoyed this one. So they come across this race that have been like secluded.
Cloaking their planet,
right. And they're dying because of some radiation, but we don't know this until the end. They just want the children.
They want children
from the Enterprise.
Yeah, which is weird
because they didn't come across other ships before and asked for children then.
No, so they had breadcrumbs, and they mentioned this. The crew of the Enterprise mentioned this. They're like, yeah, these breadcrumbs leading us to this place, and then the planet decloaks, right? So. The people were leading the ship there on purpose. Now, what's strange is that their solution to getting children was not to ask the Federation for, hey, we'll take all your orphans. Or we'll take any children you don't want and we'll raise them as our own. No, they're like, what we're going to do is steal the children that you have and hope that you're okay with it. We'll properly compensate you as much as we can. And the idea that that was their thought process just baffles me. But go on.
I guess they went, the writers went in that direction because it's just so out there. And you need something a little different.
Yeah.
To, for, you know, you need something different.
Yeah, because where's the conflict if it's like, we'll take all your orphans? It's like, okay, sure.
Yeah.
And like the end.
Yeah.
Episode over.
So yeah, I thought this was a good episode. Next, we'll talk.
Wait. So I didn't finish watching this with you. I was kind of done with it. What was the resolution to this episode?
Oh my God, I forgot.
Because you said something about them, like some radiation or something. Like, what was causing them to be sterile? Do you remember?
The cloaking device that
So the cloaking device for the planet was...
The ozone. It was affecting the ozone.
Okay.
And then it caused radiation or something. Okay. So the radiation was making all of them sterile. So it was... Beverly said there is a cure for that.
Okay.
So they could...
They gave them medical... So the resolution was they gave them some medical technology to fix the radiation problem that was making them sterile.
And yeah. Like,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
I guess you can have your children back.
That's right. That's right.
Okay.
I remember now. Okay. They gave back the children because it was possible that the thing affecting the people there would also affect the Enterprise children.
Right.
So otherwise, you're just kidnapping people and forcing them to go sterile.
Yeah, man, that is such a weird plot line, but all right.
It was weird, but interesting. And then last, we're ending on a good episode from season 2, one that you recommended, Isaac.
Yeah.
Episode 3, Elementary Dear Data.
I was like, I want to say, which is hard to get in season 2, because several things happened in season 2. One, Gates McFadden left the show.
But just for this season.
For the season. But Wesley stays on board for some inexplicable reason. So in the lore, they're like, Beverly had to go back to Starfleet Command for something, some reason. I don't even remember what it was. But Wesley could stay on the ship, and I'm like, what? Why? That makes no sense.
Well, he's like 10.
No, he's probably 13 or 14.
Okay.
But still, like, I don't know.
Like, it's weird to keep your kid on a ship.
That you're not on.
That you're not on.
Yeah. So we get this new doctor, and she's a bitch.
Yeah, she was mean to Data.
I was like, she is always like, Data is super inferior, not a person. Fuck that guy. Even though he is certainly her commanding officer. Like, he definitely outranks her as, you know, ship's second officer. So
okay, so the setup with this episode is that and this is another holodeck heavy episode, so I've been enjoying those a lot. So Geordi and Data go into the holodeck and they want to play Sherlock Holmes and Watson and solve mysteries, but obviously Data knows all the mysteries, so it's not fun for Geordi. So the new doctor is like, oh, well, you just need to make the program come up with something new that's still Holmes-esque, Holmesian.
Sure, Holmesian. Let's do it.
That's still Holmesian. And have something new that Data can actually play detective at.
Except she didn't say it like that. She's like, no, it's not going to matter. Data can't figure out things that are new. He'll only be able to figure out things that have already happened in the past.
So then Geordi decides to do this program.
Yeah, I was like, which if you were talking about an artificial intelligence from, you know, our time, sure. Like, our artificial intelligences are not good at figuring out new things. But Data, I don't think would have risen to the level of lieutenant commander and second officer if he wasn't able to, like, figure out puzzles that he hadn't seen before. But the doctor's like, nah, he can't do it. And I'm going to watch and laugh. She didn't say it like that, but that was essentially her attitude. This is why I don't like her. There's also another episode in season 2 where Data, I'm pretty sure it's season 2, Data's on trial for whether or not he is a living being. And I'm pretty sure the doctor, yeah, it had to be season two if she's in it. Pretty sure the doctor comes down on the side of he's not a living being and he can be shipped back to anywhere because we own him. And I'm like, God, fuck you. I hate you so much. Anyway, go on.
Okay, so Geordi tells the computer in the holodeck, hey, make a adversary worthy of Data.
Yeah, so in fact, his wording is create an antagonist that has the ability to defeat Data.
Which means, because he worded it wrong, you've got a Professor Moriarty that is at the same intellectual level as Data, which means he has awareness of his consciousness.
Right. I was like, that's the thing, is that the computer sort of interpreted that as, okay, well, that means he has to have access to all the information that Data would have access to.
Which is going to be on the ship.
Right. Which is going to essentially give that hologram program sort of some self-awareness, because it's going to go, Data knows that this is a hologram program. So then I know I'm a hologram program. Oh, shit. Now I'm self-aware.
And this is so cool, and this is where I'm going to start making comparisons to Westworld, because, you know, I love Westworld, even though it does have its problems. So Professor Moriarty is now aware of his being, his consciousness. So this is reminiscent of Dolores and, you know, all of the other hosts on Westworld, right, achieving that...
becoming self-aware that they are...
they are...
programs, essentially.
They are programs, yeah. So Moriarty achieves this, and it's not enough that he recognizes he's just a program. He wants more, just like Dolores wanted more. Dolores wanted to get out of Westworld and go into the human world.
Right. He wants to be able to continue to exist and to be able to explore.
Outside of the holodeck.
Right.
Because he realizes, after conversing with, I don't know, the doctor or something, that once he steps out of the holodeck, he's just going to disappear.
He would cease to exist. And I think you saw an episode in season one. I watched the end of it with you.
Yeah, yeah, where that happened.
Yeah.
So I thought this was really neat. Picard eventually, you know, comes in to solve everything. And Moriarty talks to Picard. And he's like, well, I want to exist outside this holodeck. And Picard's like, well, I'm sorry, we don't have the technology for you to do that. But hey, we'll just save your program so that when that does happen, you can come out of the holodeck.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really cool. They came to this really nice compromise. It didn't have to be more bloodshed. Well, not that there was much bloodshed in this episode, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So I liked that conclusion, and I liked that there was a possibility after watching this episode we would see the Professor Moriarty program again.
And there is. That's actually, like, I pointed this one out because I was like, oh, this is going to be important in the future in season five, I'm pretty sure. So we're going to go ahead and watch this one.
Yeah, so... this is the last episode we'll talk about for this part one of our bonus on Star Trek The Next Generation. But yeah, that was a really good one. I liked it. Kudos, honey, for picking that one out for me.
Yeah, I super like this show. I realized that what we've really done is given you a recap of awesome episodes in season four mostly. But I'm okay with that because I really like this show.
We went in the order that I watched.
Yeah.
So obviously you told me seasons one and two were rough, so we didn't watch it.
Yeah.
At first.
Because I didn't really want to watch them. But I mean, I ended up watching seasons one and two because I was like, well, I want more Star Trek The Next Generation, and I haven't seen one and two, so why don't I watch those? And then, you know, that's how everyone realizes that those episodes are rough. So if you have not started watching Star Trek The Next Generation, and somehow you listened to this whole podcast, I would recommend sort of the the episode order that we've just described here. Start at the end of season 3 and kind of watch through season 4. You're going to be interested, and then you can just start going back. And the show is fairly episodic, but it does start picking up arcs as the seasons progress. So you'll want to have some of that information before you get further into seasons 5, 6, and 7.
But yeah, we will have a part 2 later in 2 weeks. Until next time.
Until next time.
Engage.
Make it so, number one. Thanks for listening to the Bingeables podcast.
Leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you enjoy listening to our podcast, please consider giving us your support on Patreon for as little as $1 a month. Just visit us on patreon.com/bingeablespod. That's patreon.com/bingeablespod.
You can connect with us on Twitter at bingeablespod, or you can email us at bingeablespod@gmail.com.
Until next time.
The Bingeables podcast is produced by patron Raymond G.
And the music you're listening to is Shaving Mirror by Kevin.